This past May, I attended the Audio Publishers Association Conference, where I participated in a panel on listening community reviews. You'll hear this conference referred to as APAC. I was fortunate to meet and visit with a good number of narrators we know and love, including the one Eggsy Sands pointed out to me as the guy in the Hawaiian shirt, Patrick Lawler. While visiting with him, I invited Patrick to join us for this interview. Welcome, Patrick. We're so pleased to have you with us at Audio Gals.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, not only did we meet at the conference, but I visited with you at Tantor's party that night, where a few of us, I believe, twisted your arm to come to the narrator's blogger's breakfast the next morning.
Yeah, it was a tough sell. I think what you had to do was ask me. And I think that was about where my resolve folded and I said yes.
Okay. Well, almost the first words you said to me when we met at APAC were, "I want to narrate more romance." And that definitely got my attention. Of course, I think I had just been indirectly selling romance to male narrators in the audience. Please share with us, just what were your thoughts behind that comment?
Yeah, indirectly, as in, we need more male narrators in romance.
That's right.
It's pretty subtle. No, it was a blast going to that. It was not at all what I expected, but it was really very informative, and it was wonderful listening to you talk about it. And I've been a huge fan of romance. Romance is it's a very pure form of storytelling that has it has your heroes and it has your heroines and it has bodice ripping, heaving bosom, turgid member, rippling abs, sex. And it always has, you know, very distinct characters. And it's generally speaking wholesome and good, and I'm trying to think of ways not to make it sound all, you know, Pollyanna and stuff, but it's a very gentle form of escapism that always has good people who are trying to find their way through perhaps a difficult situation or a miscommunication with other good people who they actually should be together with, and eventually find their way through whatever miasma they've created for themselves. And the fan base is magnificent. The fan base is the most vocal, demonstrative, actually very accepting group that I've dealt with since I started audiobooks back in 2001. It's always a lot of fun. I was amazed to find that in romances, you have far fewer sex scenes than you do in like normal books, because 90% of the time it's about the hero and heroine trying to find their way to each other. Forgive me if I'm rambling.
No, we really appreciate that observation, because so often romance is dubbed as the genre that has too many sex scenes. So honestly, we appreciate that, because we know it's about, you know, it's about that happy ending, about, you know, everybody getting it worked out in the end, you know.
It is, and not the happy ending in the massage parlor sense of the word either. Although that does come into play sometimes. But no, it is. It's usually if there is a sex scene, and I've actually done a couple of books where there isn't. And part of the fun is that there almost is, but then isn't. In your average detective novel or your average mystery, there's just as much, if not more, sex these days. And part of the fun, like with every other form of entertainment, part of the fun is getting to it. It's seeing the characters wanting to get together but not getting together, and then the tension that creates. And you see, like with a lot of like famous romances on television, like Sam and Diane, well, that's a big one from Cheers. Once they get together, there's really no place to go, you know. It's kind of over. You know, we don't want to see them together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't want to see them together. We want to see them getting together. And
that's right.
And that's the beauty of romances. And that's why they're so much fun to do. And then, you know, certain authors are very good at finally writing that sex scene when you get to it. And it's a lot of fun.
So are there any particular romance subgenres that would interest you more than others?
Well, I'm a big fan of, obviously, of the Suzanne Brockman novels. But her style of kind of mixing romance with action adventure. I sort of like the ability for, you know, these big, big, tough Navy SEALs or spies or private security guys who are used to being in a violent macho environment, having to deal with the other side of this and having to deal with their tenderness and their emotions, which is, you know, kind of verboten a lot of times. And it's fun, especially when they're put in situations that are fairly uncomfortable, like dealing with a woman that they may be attracted to, but don't know quite how to communicate with yet.
Yes.
So, and then, you know, the next scene, they go up and blow up a bridge and destroy all the bad guys. You know, it's a really nice, those kind of mixes always amuse me. I also am getting to be a fan, believe it or not. Well, no, I shouldn't say that because it's a fun genre, the paranormal romances. And seeing how an author uses their imagination to create like new ways of getting at the same old subjects, you know. Mm-hmm. And I tell them I do a great Scottish vampire, you know, for their Highlander paranormal romance. Action adventures, you know, come on. Yeah. So, but I'm just a big fan of, you know, your basic straightforward romances. Those are great.
Okay. Time. Well, we've got to get out the word. We want you narrating more romance. So
yes,
we'll
please.
Help in any way we can.
Well, thank you. Get the word out to your authors.
Yes. In June, I saw that you participated in the Going Public in Shorts project over at the Bermuda Onion blog. There I read your entertaining description of the various types of work you have done in the name of acting. Can you tell our listeners about your acting background and how you got started recording audiobooks?
Sure. Briefly, I won't leave it as long as I have it on the Bermuda Onion blog, but I got started basically in audiobooks. I've been an actor since the late 70s. A girlfriend of mine in high school got me interested in it when my swim team disbanded. And I've been kind of hooked on theater ever since. And it's very hard, especially in Los Angeles, where I was living in 2000, to make a living doing theater. There's not a lot of paying work there. So I was looking at other genres. And for Valentine's Day one year, my wife got me a class at a local Learning Annex affiliate for a voiceover. And I immediately fell in love with it. I fell in love with animation and narration, particularly because they're all about acting and storytelling. And then the following year, I went to a conference in New York where I met several audio publishers and was able to audition for them and started working and kind of haven't looked back since. It's been a wild ride and it's been a lot of fun. And frankly, the audiobook industry is everything that acting has plus a nice paycheck. And so I love it. And hopefully I'll knock on wood, I'll continue to do it for a while to come.
How many years have you narrated audiobooks now?
Well, I did my first one, which is a romance of sorts, back in early 2001. Actually, the day after that conference that I just mentioned, it was a short story. It was from a book called Aqua Erotica. And it was a story called New House, which was basically a half hour long. I describe it as very much like a Letters to Penthouse. And it was great. It was great fun, but very interesting and very not what I expected audiobooks to be. And I had a good time. I used a pseudonym because I didn't think that was going to help my career any. And as it turns out, now I'm very proud of it, and I think it's a lot of fun, but it is a little raunchy and a little silly. So it's out there, You House by Daniel J. Cabrillo, narrated by Gerard Patrick.
Oh, that was my next thing I was going to ask. Okay.
I'll give you that one.
When I hear the name Patrick Lawlor, I immediately think Suzanne Brockman's Troubleshooter series. When did you start narrating her books, and how many have you performed today? You have any idea?
Well, I have a ballpark figure of 16. Breaking the Rules was the last in the series, and that was book number 16. We started, Melanie Eubank and I started in 2004 with book 7 in the series, which was known as Flashpoint. And so that leaves us with 9 that we've done between Melanie, Renee Rodman, and I. And then there are also books that aren't in the series but relate to the series, like the last book we did, which was technically book number 17, which was Headed for Trouble. And what that was an anthology of a lot of different little short stories and novellas featuring the characters from the Troubleshooter series throughout. And it's kind of a nice little bonus for our fans and followers that have been with us for the whole time.
So, have all of the Brockman books been this dual narration?
The Troubleshooter series has, and but I've done a few other ones that have not. For example, Love with the Proper Stranger,
Oh, okay.
or Letters to Kelly,
Ah.
or for those that can't choose, Unstoppable, which is Love with the Proper Stranger and Letters to Kelly.
Okay, we actually reviewed that at Speaking of
Oh, you
Audiobooks.
did? Oh,
All right. We
dear.
did.
Well, they
Well,
were great fun, but we did those as a single. I did those as a single narration.
okay.
And
Well,
I think it's only the Troubleshooter series. I think she's written like 450, 500 books, and so it might be a few of
she's
these.
very prolific, yes. Over the years in writing about audiobooks, I have received many questions from listeners about dual narrations, and I honestly don't know the answers to most of those questions. Usually, those questions are from newer listeners, and they address their wish for every audiobook to be narrated by a male and female narrator team. With the Brockman books, do you all narrate at the same time, meaning one speaks and the other responds? Or do you alternate narrating sections of the book?
Well, we do. Suzanne Brockman has a style of writing that she calls deep point of view. And what that is she'll write the book in small sections, like she'll even divide her chapters up into smaller sections that are told from a particular character's point of view. And what we'll do is we'll divide those up depending on the character whose point of view is being expressed. For example, I'll do. And it often happens that we'll go over the same scene or we'll overlap. I'll do the male point of view on a particular scene. And then when the point of view shifts to a female, either Melanie or Renee or Angela Daw, who worked with me as well, will take over the narration. And sometimes it's very amusing because the same thing will be covered by two different characters. And everything is completely different. You know, the way they're looking at it, the way the characters sound, obviously, because we're totally different people. And it's very effective for telling the kind of stories that Suzanne tells. So you can be in, what was the Kazbekistan, which was this wonderful, Middle Eastern country that she invented for the Troubleshooters series, where there's a hotbed of political and civil unrest and things like that. You can be there. You can also be in Quantico, or you can be in San Diego, and you can be in all three of them at once because the different characters are there. So she can do a lot more as a storyteller using that. And we have a lot of fun as narrators because we can hear. I can hear what the female narrator does, and she can obviously hear what I do, and we can riff on that, and we can kind of develop the characters as we go along.
So you actually are together when those are recorded?
We have been since. The only one we haven't done that way is the very first one that we did, Flashpoint. Mm-hmm. And we find that part of it, part of the fun of it is we would direct one another, for example, and we, and it'd be very difficult because we would be in the same booth and with two different microphones, pretty much staring at each other across a very small space. And the one who isn't reading, trying desperately not to cough or yawn or make any other bodily noises. And we kind of oversee the other character. And since all of us know the storylines and the characters so well, we're able to pretty much cut right to the chase and give direction and hear anything that, that might be going on that would be useful for us when we turn around and do our parts. So it kind of serves dual purpose, you know, and we, you know, the company, you know, saved money on directors doing that because we would basically, you know, we would split our time between directing and acting. So we would be able to cover both bases for them. And it's just, it's just a lot of fun because it's very much like acting with somebody else, which we don't get to do very often as narrators.
Mm-hmm. So why don't you think we see more of this male, female narrator teams working side by side, either with the alternating point of view? I guess that would depend on the writer's style, but let's say reading the appropriate characters. I assume it's a cost issue.
It would appear to be, yeah, it would appear to be that, it's not cost effective. Also, the way the audiobook industry seems to be heading is more narrators having studios in their homes. And in my case, my studio is so small that it prohibits more than one person being in here at a time. So it's very difficult to do that kind, especially the, as you say, character appropriate voices. It's very difficult to do that kind of thing if you're not in the same studio.
Mm-hmm. I would think so.
We'll have a little, it'll be very interesting to see when and if we ever have to do a Suzanne Brockman novel separate, because, you know, it lends itself to that because you can do it in chunks and I can do all the male narration and Melanie or Renee or, Angela can do the female narration from their places of work, and then an engineer can put them all together and it should be just fine. We will lose, if we do that though, we will lose a certain amount of the connectedness that we have now. And I hope mm-hmm. that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. So okay. All right. Well, since the last Brockman book, Headed for Trouble, was out in April, we'll just wait to see what is next there. But what are some of the other projects that you are currently working on?
Well, right at the moment, I'm in the middle of a series by an author named L.J. Sellers, who does, it's called the Detective Jackson Mysteries series. And it takes place in Eugene, Oregon, in the present day. And it's basically about a detective of a certain age who's a few months away from retirement and keeps getting all the juicy mystery, the murder mysteries in the Eugene, Oregon area. And he's kind of I wouldn't say anti-hero. He's a good guy. He's just a little past his prime. He's had a little bit of weight. He's had a few surgeries. Maybe doesn't move quite as fast as he used to. And there is a budding love interest. There's a very interesting kind of love triangle that's developing. He is, or it's maybe a love quadrangle. I'm not quite sure how you know, love square. he has an ex-wife who's an alcoholic who's dealing with her demons, but she's very much in the picture. Current girlfriend who is a, works with veterans in a rehab clinic and has recently lost her son in Iraq. And a partner who is younger, like maybe I'd say in her 30s, and very energetic and very attractive, and very much in love with Detective Jackson. So it's a wonderful series, and I've done 5 of them now, and I believe there are 9 in the series. So we're getting that together, and that's through Brilliance Audio. Mm-hmm. And let's see, what else am I working on? I just closed a production of Shakespeare's As You Like It, which I won't ever leave theater. I have to go back to it as often as I can to rejuvenate. That was a lot of fun. It was here in Milwaukee, outdoors, which presented an interesting vocal challenge, recording the Detective Jackson series all day and then going out at night and blasting, you know, my voice up the side of a hill. So, but I made it through it.
What character did you play?
I played the character Jaques, which, if you know your Shakespeare, is the one that has the immortal line, "All the world's a stage." Okay. And of course the 7 ages of man speech that follows it. So it was an interesting dichotomy and a very interesting vocal exercise, but a lot of fun. And I can't wait for my next one. I also have a new one coming that should be coming out any day now by Johnny Bowden is the author's name. And it's called Living Low Carb, which is a very interesting book. I wouldn't even call it a diet book. It's more of sort of a lifestyle examination of carbohydrates and how much, if any, we need of carbohydrates. And it sheds some very interesting light on the subject of diet and what we think we know about grains and bread and those kind of things. And it has 23 different reviews of different diets and different Atkins diets and South Beach diet and the Zone and all of these low carb, high fat, high protein or balanced fat protein carb diets. And it's a fascinating read, and hopefully it's a fascinating audiobook as well. So that's what I've been working on, and we'll see what comes next.
I just discovered a book that you narrated, I don't know how long ago, but I am from Oklahoma, and you narrated, I believe it's the name of it's The Dust Bowl.
Ah!
And that is a fascinating, fascinating read for especially those that grew up in Oklahoma. I highly recommend it. I'm only listening to it now, but I had read it and you do quite the job with it.
Well, thank you very much. It is called The Worst Hard Time.
That's it. Yes.
And yes. It's a wonderful book. I'm looking for it here because I usually have it sitting right here because and there it is. It's by Timothy Egan, who's amazing. I always keep it close by because I absolutely love it. I believe it won. I'm looking to see what it won. It won a Pulitzer Prize. Well, Egan has won the Pulitzer Prize. It won the National Book Award a couple of years ago. It's been on the New York Times bestseller list forever. And actually, it was featured in, I believe it's The Dust Bowl, which is why you thought of that, on PBS.
Yes, yes.
So, and it is one of my favorites too. So I'm glad you liked it. Thank you.
And it has to be fairly long. I would think it's more than your average 10 hours, but I can't recall. But anyway, it's fascinating history.
It just seems that way because of the way I read it. It's 12 hours long, actually.
12 hours. Well,
and it is a fascinating time in history too.
Well, and it's not just for us Okies. It's for anyone. It's beautifully written and very nicely performed.
Thank you very much.
Tomorrow we'll be featuring an article that Melinda wrote about Suzanne Brockman's series. And she talks about you as a narrator. She's a very big fan. And she mentions that you are more of a storyteller. What do you think about that description of your narration?
I think it's very flattering, and thank you, Melinda. That's really awesome. That's what we strive for. Many of us, most of us. I think it probably is very accurate. I've always considered myself a little bit of a storyteller. Irish Catholic background, you know, it just kind of goes with the genes, I guess. But my background in theater, I think, is part of that, where it's all about telling the story and moving it forward. And for me, I remember, you know, just growing up and having grown-ups read me stories before bed. And the more entertaining ones were usually the ones where I was included. And so I try to include the audience as much as I can, as opposed to laying it on them or putting it out there. As far as nonfiction, that's a totally different matter, but it's very flattering to hear that I'm considered more a storyteller than a narrator. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. Do you have anything else to add before we sign off here?
I can't think of anything. I'm sure as soon as we sign off, I'll think of about 10 million things. but it's been a blast doing this. I encourage people to listen to more romances, but I think that's probably preaching to the choir. And hopefully I'll be doing more of them soon.
Well, we hope to hear that. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much. And I look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right. Thank you so much, Patrick.
This well, has been thank fantastic, you.
And I knew it would be. So let's see if I can get my work off here. I knew it would be. Hey, meeting you at APAC. I knew it would be.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was a blast. Are you going to go back? Are you going to go back next year?
I probably will. I'm going to try to drag Brenda with me next year. We'll see.
I've decided it would be fun. Every year I kind of wait till the last minute and think, I am not going to go. It's expensive. But I think it's really important. I think it's the one time of year that everybody who's even associated with this industry get a chance to meet each other.
Yeah.
You know, and we get to actually be like an industry instead of like little pods of, you know, creativity off all over the country. So it's.
Well, and I was impressed at what you're actually a pretty close community, although you're spread all over the place. There's probably not that many of you. I've been told by publishers I've worked with that, you know, there's really not that many of us out there. And I did see that at APAC.
There's probably, I would probably say it's probably a safe bet to say maybe 100 of us narrators at the most that actually make a living at it, that basically do this full time. And, but really there are very, very few of us, and we all kind of like each other. So
I can tell.
It's kind of fun. It's fun to be around them. And it's very, for me, it's very inspiring to see the group that I'm associated with. We have this thing at APAC. I don't know if you got a chance to go to it. It was called the Listener's Lounge.
Oh, I did.
Yeah. For me, that's the rejuvenation. That's the fountain of youth for what we do is getting to hear my fellow narrators just get up there and have a good time and do what we do, you know? And it's very humbling and inspiring to see the level of talent that I'm associated with, you know, for whatever reason, you know, it's just, they're so marvelous. And, and for the most part, all throughout the industry, I have to say, cause I've been in where I'm currently in many entertainment industries, but audiobooks, the people are just really great.